You might not hear it here first, but the conversation here is different because it includes you. Politics, diversity, religion, social justice, and what the hell were you thinking moments. Thought-provoking, inspirational, and sometimes shocking. Welcome to the Winner's Circle. Annette Lateague is here. It's time for Word on the Curb.
Hey, I'm Annette. I'm here with you tonight at Word on the Curb podcast studio. I am happy to have you here. As you can see, and I don't know if you can read, my little thing over here in the Black Girls Locker Room, it says Solidarity Wins. And it does. In everything we do and with everybody we deal with, solidarity wins. Tonight, as you can see on the screen, I have a very special guest. And before I get into it, I want to remind you that we're on TikTok, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook on three pages, and we're everywhere podcasts are and wherever you want to be. I hope that you'll join us. We're talking about Word on the Curb. And what that means is we're talking about people, places, and things on our curb, in our neighborhoods, in our community, and how it impacts us. And so tonight, again, I have a very special guest. He needs no introduction. And I'm really excited to have him here tonight, the former and first Black mayor of the city of Trenton, Douglas H. Palmer. See us on YouTube, like, subscribe, share, and ring the bell. This is an occasion here with this podcast where we want you to put all of our business in the street. Welcome, Mayor.
Hey, it's my pleasure. You know, I don't know what I did to deserve being on your show, Word on the Curb, but I'm glad to be here. It doesn't matter how long it took. I know part of it was my fault, but I'm glad to be here. And I want to congratulate you on your podcast and all the people that listen to you and get involved in Trenton. So thank you very much. And I logged on 10 minutes before just so I didn't miss it. So thank you for allowing me to be here on your show.
I'm happy that you're here. Mayor, one of the things I want you to know about podcasting is people will watch you now and later. They will see you now and in the future in this podcast. And we've been up to 5,000 views throughout the entire social media platform. The algorithm tracks it for us. And so we know that. And we're happy about that, that we're reaching that many people. So it's good to be here tonight. If you come on and you don't allow live stream to share your name, I will not recognize you or respond to any of your comments. So please know that. I have a Facebook user on now. The only thing I can see is Facebook user. When you connect to YardStream for podcasting, it asks if you will allow YardStream to use your name. If you don't say no, you'll be sitting there and I will erase the comments if you make any. So thank you again for joining us. Mayor, I have a few questions for you.
Yes.
Just a few things I'd like to know. Haven't had the opportunity to serve with you. There are some things I know about then, but there's a lot less that I know about now. So this podcast is about then and now. One of the first things I want to, ask is, what's your favorite thing to do post-mayor? What are you doing?
Well, I'll tell you, one of my favorite things to do, and even when I was mayor, I'm very involved in sports. Okay, I played baseball in the West End Little League, West End Babe Ruth League, Trenton Schroats. In high school, I went to Bordentown Military Institute and then went to Hampton. I was a baseball player. Pretty good. So I love sports.
Wait a minute. That pretty good thing. Just answer the question. Could you play or not?
Yeah, it was good. As a matter of fact, I was honored and blessed just in March of this year to be inducted in Hampton University, my alma mater, Sports Hall of Fame. I was, all CIAA. I was all everything in Mercer County area in baseball. And really, baseball has been such a part of my life that it always is with me. So I love to watch sports on TV, go with my wife and daughter to sporting events, although they don't always like to do it. But I love to watch sports and go to sporting events. And, you know, that's what I like to do. I don't play golf. I don't do those things. I just like to watch sports. So that's my passion.
That's your passion. All right. Your passion is baseball, sports, and that's
and
a good
football thing. And basketball and the
I love football and basketball.
World Series with women and all that.
Who's your team? Who's your football team?
Dallas Cowboys.
Well, you all right know, then.
Hey, haters, if you're going to hate, you got to do your job. Cowboys. And people, you know, and that people ask me, you're in Philly New York areas. Why would you want to be with the Cowboys? Well, when I grew up, when I was a youngster in the early 60s, the Cowboys had more black players than anybody. I mean, they really did. And you would see the Cowboys play twice against the Redskins, now the Commanders, twice against the Giants, twice against the Eagles, and they were on Thanksgiving. I mean, it was only 11 games at that time. And I gravitated to seeing how many black players there were on the Cowboys, and they've been my team ever since. I'm not happy with them or the owner to the extent of he picks good teams, but I'm true blue, Dallas Cowboy, ride or die. And lately we haven't been doing anything in a generation. Still with them. You always got to be with your team, no matter what.
That's right. And I am a Cowboys fan, have been for quite some time, for multiple reasons. I am also not happy, but I'm going to rock that star until the day I die. That Dallas Cowboys star. And one of the surprise guests that I have tonight is also a Cowboy fan. He'll be coming on, you know, when you're finished, just to share a little bit about why Cowboys rock. You know, but Mayor, so let's get into some stuff here just for a bit. Tell me, honestly, given the opportunity between then and now, if you had the opportunity, what would you change?
Well, you know, you look back at your life, and I'll be 72 in October, and you look at your life and say, if I could change something. But quite frankly, you know, I was blessed all my life, blessed to be born and raised in Trenton, to Dorothy Vaughn and George Palmer, who came up here from Charleston, have wonderful sister, my only sibling, and wonderful nephews, Palmer and Walker. And all my
Shout
life.
Shout out to Karen.
Yeah, and I've been blessed. So if you say, what would I change? I wouldn't change anything, although, man, I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I made a lot of mistakes as mayor, but they all helped me learn to be the person I am. So I wouldn't change anything. I really wouldn't. But there's some things that I wish I could have done different. But I'm happy where I am and what I was able to do in Trenton as mayor.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What were some of your greatest strengths and failures as mayor?
Well, I think one of the greatest strengths I had was growing up in Trenton all my life, being involved. I mean, my mom and dad had me so involved in everything. I mentioned I played in the Western Little League. I was in the PAL Cub League with Winfield Layton. My first coach was African-American with PALs on the Dodgers. I played instruments. I played four instruments, the piano, the trumpet, the violin, the French horn, and I was involved in the Carver Center. Carver Center had a band, and I was in that. I was involved in the Boy Scouts at Har Sinai Temple, a Jewish temple. Mm. I was involved in everything. My mom and dad had me involved, you know, in everything. So it just made me the person that I am, and also helped me realize what we could do in Trenton. So I think my greatest strength was coming up in grassroots, and wasn't even called grassroots then, working with everybody, blacks, whites, and even Latinos, and getting to know people for people. And that was, and my, so my biggest strength was to be able to work with all kinds of people, see them as they were, and to bring people together, because you have to, and you know this, because Annette, you were there when I was mayor, but being the first African-American mayor, Trenton, at a time in 90, when people didn't even think you could have a black mayor. As a matter of fact, when I first said I was gonna run, and I was a county freeholder, they said, Trenton ain't ready. And that was the word they used. They ain't ready for a black mayor, and they wouldn't vote for you. But I had people like Dr. Emmons and Reverend Woodson and Johnny Watson, of course, and others that pushed me. And my greatest strength is not forgetting where I came from, having people around me, being involved in the community, and bringing people together. That was, I believe, my greatest strength. Because when you become, it's different now, but back then, Trenton wasn't even a majority black city. You had a lot of Caucasians and some Latinos. And I had to work with all of them. And I was able to do it because of how I was raised and brought up and working with people and going out there and talking to them and making sure that the issues that involved Trenton weren't just black issues or white issues or Latino issues. They were all our issues. And the only way we can get better if we work together. And so with the great staff I had and people on council that, like you and others, that believed in me, that was my strength, bringing people together and sharing a vision and including them. Now, my weakness is sometimes it takes me too long to make a decision, but that's the Libra in me. And I wish I had done things quicker, but at the end of the day, I'll stand on my record and what I did, and I'm proud of what we all accomplished.
It takes time, but you mentioned some things that I don't really want to blow past because it's important. You mentioned that although folks did not believe the city was ready, there were in fact people who believed in you. That's the leadership that helped make a difference. And tonight, I'd just like to reiterate that John Watson and Reverend Woodson were active, not just in politics, but in the community. And I think that made a difference. And John Watson believed in people. He didn't have to know. John Watson was a man who didn't have to know who you were to help you. He would help you simply because he believed in his people.
And you know,
unfortunately, that's not always what happens now.
No, but you know, there are so many other people, which is what gives, I think, both of us a perspective. Eleanor Raines.
Jenny Stubblefield.
Yeah. There are just so many people that were involved, and a lot of women, Mildred Thomas, and it's just so many people that were involved. We didn't always get along because I was a guy coming up and we were anxious like the young people today, and they were saying, hold up, hold up. But they were guiding forces to me, and they helped. And so, you know, Annette, what I look at now in my life and experience is to help the young generation that's coming up.
That's
and
great.
I am so... Man, I'm so optimistic about the young people that are coming up. Just look at what we have on council. You've got Yasminelli Gonzalez. You've got Jossie, Crystal, a lot of young people that are involved, even Austin Edwards and my nephew Pump. You've got young people, Teron, and the list goes on, of young people in their 30s, early 40s, that are taking up the mantle. And what I love about them, not only are they committed, but they don't push us aside. They don't say, that was that. They may not agree or whatever, but they want to hear our opinion. And that helps me, that helps us, and that's going to help our city, because we are at a crossroads, and we're going to do great things because we have young people and the elders that really care about moving this city and county forward. It's all about unity and coming together.
Solidarity, as it says in the background, solidarity wins. And so I think it's important to recognize, too, that when you push aside your experience, you're headed for brick walls you don't have to hit. Because learning from the past helps us grow a better future. We didn't get everything right, and neither will this council or mayor. We didn't get it all right, but we did do some good things. And I think we absolutely did some good things. And those are things to remember. I think one of the greatest challenges for me then, and even now, and having been an executive at the board, is that so many people expect you to fix everything that happened since slavery. And not only do they expect you to fix it, but they don't want to play a role in the fixing. So I'm as excited as you are about the young people who want to be engaged. I'm excited about people who have a real interest in understanding and learning the game, because politics is difficult. It's not always easy. And if you're going to accomplish your goals, you better keep principles before personalities. Otherwise, you're going to fail.
Well, you know, what's interesting now, and what I didn't have to deal with, or you had to didn't have to deal with, the social media is just, it's a dynamic that I'm still learning about. So as I see it, that's an issue. It's good or bad, but with the problems that we have in terms of violence, gun violence in the city, it's can't be accepted. Sometimes we can get desensitized to it, but we as a community have to say, this is not acceptable. I think there are groups in the churches and young people that are going to be working together and speaking up about it. I think we have a role as elders to listen and to work with folks that want to do things, because there's no way we can accept people getting shot, a three-year-old getting killing themselves with a gun, shootings going on. And you know, I had it when I was mayor. Joe Santiago helped us reduce crime. But there's more than just police. You need a comprehensive plan and leadership and people coming together. And like you always say, mental health. Mental health is a big issue. It's a big issue everywhere. Young people are committing suicides at record level. And you know, back in the day, we used to look at it as people committing suicide. Oh, that's a white thing. It's not a white thing anymore. It's a black thing. It's a gay thing. It's a Latino thing. It's an Asian thing. Mental health. And it didn't help because COVID, these young people felt isolated. And so what do we do with all this information? Do we just say, oh, my God, they're shooting again? No. We have to work, and we are, and we will work with everyone, bring them together. We have to change the dynamic in health, maternal health, economic development, literacy. And I'm up for it. I tell you, Annette, Councilwoman, I am up for it, and I know you are, and I can't wait, because we use me, and also not use me. I'm gonna help lead, and I'm gonna lead not like here I am, but I'm gonna lead by working with leaders and helping them push an agenda that we collectively look at, and how we're gonna help Black people in Mercer County, who are at the bottom of all the statistics, help us reach our full potential. And I'm fully engaged in that. I am fully engaged in that, and look forward to seeing it happen and doing it. It's not going to be easy. Like you said, there's going to be personalities. Oh, I don't like him. I don't like her. Why are they this? Who is he? Who's she? At the end of the day, our babies can't afford us fighting. And I think with the people that we have, and I'm going to start mentioning names because, but they're people that have been engaged and that have always agreed with me or disagreed with me, but I'm willing to reach out with all of us because they have good hearts and they're still in the fight. And we're going to do it.
And Mayor, you know what? Getting it done is what matters. Even during our tenure, you know, working to try to bring the community to the table, because the police director can only do but so much. We cannot harbor guns and drugs and then cry foul. We have to get involved. We have to say no more. We have to be a part of our community in that we refuse to allow violence and you know, these shootings to run rampant, and they are. And so, you know, yo, listen, get your kids.
Well, you know, there's a fear about this too. You know, people want to help or they want to get involved, but they're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
We have to confront that, and we have to have many conversations with social service people, healthcare people, mental health people, elected officials, the hospitals, everybody's got a role on what we can do, because let's face it, if Trenton's not safe, who's going to have their children, my children, anybody else, go to events there? Who's going to develop there? So safety is paramount, and everyone should feel safe. So we will come up with a plan involving everybody.
We need the community's participation.
Absolutely. And the community to recognize it. You're not in this by yourself. And that just having people shot is not acceptable.
No, mother.
It wasn't acceptable. We had things. It's not acceptable. And I'd never want us to get desensitized to violence. As mayor in 05 and 06, and you know, we went.
Good evening. My name is Annette, and we are live here at Word on the Curb. Word on the Curb podcast is a podcast that talks about people, places, and things, and what's going on in our communities and in our lives. The real deal, what's actually happening, from politics to social services to love, to romance, to baby carriages. We're talking about it. Tonight, our men are going to be sharing what's on their mind, what they're thinking about, and what they're talking about. But before we do that, I'd like to thank my sponsor, the Ingram Kingdom Mobile Kitchen, and Sister Seafood, Amaris, Jasna, Don, and Derek. I'd like to thank you for your sponsorship. I appreciate it. I want to shout out every small business owner who is out here doing their thing. I want to shout out and offer my condolences to any family or parent who's lost a child due to the violence in the city. I want you to know that we care, we're there, we're from the neighborhoods, and we understand. And tonight I have some very special people with me, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves, beginning with our commissioner.
Good evening, Sister Annette. This is Commissioner Sam Frisby from the city of Trenton. I've been elected commissioner for the last 12 years, but more than that, I'm a father, you know, I'm a community member, and I'm the husband of Council President Teska Frisbee. And yay. So, I'm a son. And so I shout out my mother, Janine Frisbee LaRue, but just a brother who's just trying to make things happen in our community.
And Janine has a wonderful podcast, LaRue's Cafe.
LaRue's Cafe, that's correct.
Look it up when you get a chance and give her a shout out and listen to her. You know, we're out here talking about some phenomenal things, and those things include you. So remember LaRue's Cafe. And next we have Winston Dramatic Mills.
From the Winston Dramatic Show podcast out of Trenton, New Jersey, small business owner, entrepreneur out of Trenton, New Jersey. Love the city of Trenton. I'm here for most, not all black men, and togetherness and to open doors to create new things as much as I can. And I'd like to thank Annette Lartigue for putting me on the show. You know what I mean? Me and her go back a nice distance and we conversate well.
Yes.
And she put certain things in perspective and I appreciate it so much. And thanks for inviting me.
And I'd like you guys to also look up Winston Dramatic Mills podcast.
Absolutely.
He hosts the podcast and co-hosts with his brother, Paul, from time to time. And I want you to check them out because they have some exciting things on the way. I'm not going to spill the beans, but they've got some great things in the making. And I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing that. And next we have Mr. Paul Mills.
All right. First of all, good evening, Annette. My name is Paul Mills, husband to Rajanta Hodges Mills, brother to Winston Dramatic Mills. I'm the behind-the-scenes producer of the WDS show, along with being a professional life coach, along with my wife. She's a mental health therapist, and we formulated a website, Diesel Therapeutics. You'll find us at www.dieseltherapeutics.com, where we offer mental health evaluations. We offer help. We're here to help. And all the basic mental health necessities needed to move us further. Now, as a life coach, I'm more grassroots. So, you know, I like to deal with people hands on. But we'll get more into that at a later time. But once again, Ms. Annette, I'd like to thank you for having me and my brother on Word on the Curb podcast. You know, we're going to turn it up tonight.
We're going to turn it up. And I want to tell you that these three men, I can vouch for the integrity and the character. Reputation is what other people think, but what these men actually do make the difference. And that's why they're here tonight. And tonight, our topic is simple. What are men talking about? What are they thinking about? Come on, Paul, bring it in. What are they thinking about out there?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, we think about a lot of things, but you know, just to start it off, like we may think about sports, you know, our favorite teams, especially when football season.
Wait a minute, you're getting ready to start some trouble.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how deep this is going to go, but I'm a Cowboys fan.
So am I.
We're Cowboys fans.
My little brother Sam, he's got some things going on, but we're going to
work. What's up, Sam?
I got love for y'all, man. I just can't rock with the Cowboys. I've never been able to rock with them. You know, when you get put up on a pedestal and people call you America's team, man, I'm part of America, but you ain't my team. You know?
America's team. Who else is?
Look, for me, almost anybody could be, but anybody but Dallas. That's where I'm.
No, don't treat us. All right, Sam. Here you go. This is why we're America's team, Sam. Right?
Talk to him.
In America, it's all about turning something into something bigger from nothing, right?
That's right.
Now, Jerry Jones bought this team for pennies on a dollar.
Talk to him,
Pete. And made it the most wealthiest team, not only in the country, but in the world. If that's not the epitome of the American dream labeling us the America's team, then I don't know what else is, brother.
But here it is, bro.
I could rock with you if that's when it started. But it started before Jerry Jones bought the team. Yeah. So look, that was a wonderful soliloquy that you just put together. And you rocked that thing and backed it up real nice in a bump. They was called America's Team when I was in elementary school.
That's right. They were. They was on their way. They were on their way to be
a
member.
I'm not necessarily a fan of Jerry Jones, but I'm a fan of Dallas Cowboys.
I rock with my man Jalen Hurts, you know, because when you talk about somebody who's a comeback story, what that brother did in college when he couldn't win championship and then decided he was going to switch, go to a different college, rocked it out there, came to the NFL. Philly didn't even want him when they got him, right? They didn't want that young boy when they got him, but now they know they got something special. He's one of the top three quarterback in the NFL. And I tell you what I love about that brother, the fact that his agent is a sister. And his agent, she got him paid. She got paid in the, you know, in the process. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying?
That is dope.
That's right.
That is dope.
So for me, I rock with players. I don't so much as rock with teams. I do rock with players. Look, I'm going to tell it to you like this, Paul. It's so funny. You go in the basketball world. My nephews, who I helped raise, both of my nephews, when they were coming up, we used to watch the Lakers. Mm-hmm. But I only watched the Lakers because I was a Kobe fan, not a Lakers fan.
Right.
As soon as Kobe retired, my nephew said, Uncle Sam, you hit me with the fake thing. He said, I thought we were Lakers fans. I said, no, you were a Lakers fan. I was a Kobe fan. You know what I'm saying?
I can respect that. I can respect that because there are some Eagle players like hers that I really like.
Right. We respect
that. So I can respect that. Yeah, but go ahead, Paul. What's up out here?
Well, you know, I'm just to piggyback off of that. I like Jalen Hurts. You know why? Yeah. Because he's reminded me of Dak Prescott. They both had similar stories.
Oh, Lord. They see how he wrapped it back around the Dallas?
No. Honestly.
We got to come back.
Both young African-American quarterbacks.
No question.
Both have a lot of losses in their life. Both rebounded, you know, and they're still striving to be the top. Only thing that's different is that Jalen got a chance to go experience the Super Bowl. Other than that, they're similar. Run first quarterbacks. They're both black quarterbacks. They're both helming a team of prestige. They lead with their prestige, if you notice that. They don't lead with all the talk, all the negative naysay stuff. They lead with prestige. So I got respect for him, man. But some of the other people, like Shady McCoy, I can't stand him. I can't stand Shady.
Yeah, he's just not a, we don't like the Eagles, man.
I can't stand Shady.
We don't want the
Eagles.
Shady was giving people business.
He was.
What else are we talking about?
Shady McCoy. Yeah, Shady McCoy is a true Eagle.
You know who I loved who was an Eagle, and back in the day I was watching him heavy? Randall Cunningham.
Yeah.
Randall Cunningham laid the foundation for a lot of these young brothers. Yes, and here's what's funny. When you go back through Randall's history, most people think that Randall was a running quarterback. If you follow him from high school through college, he was actually a pocket quarterback
with
great athleticism. But the Eagles had such a horrible line, he was running for his life all the time.
Randall had a cannon. I still remember the play against the Giants when he was in his own end zone. He ducked under a defender and threw a 95-yard bomb to his receiver for a touchdown.
Yes, sir.
He has a cannon.
Throw it 65 yards, going the opposite way of his arm.
Cross body.
With
accuracy.
Mahomes reminds me a lot of him.
Absolutely.
All right. Come on. What else are we talking about out here?
Okay.
They talking about whether or not LeBron going to get this fifth ring.
That's what we're talking about.
If he go to Orlando with his son, he might get it in Orlando.
Yeah, he's trying to bring his son with him. He's trying to wait for his son to enter the league, and then he's coming in. What you think? What you guys think on that? Is that a good idea or is time for him to go? Because I think
he's gonna stay. And I'm not a LeBron fan. I'm a Steph Curry fan. But LeBron's gonna come back.
Let me ask y'all this, right?
You think he's gonna come back in Orlando or he's gonna come back?
He's gonna stay where he is with the Lakers.
He's
gonna stay there. He's gonna push that record out a whole lot further. Because ain't nobody going to catch him for the next 30 years in terms of points scored. right? And then he's going to figure out wherever his son's going, because he's only going to sign a small deal, and he's going to go wherever his son goes, because he's always said he wanted to play with his son. That's what he's going to do.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask one quick question about this LeBron thing. Say his son get into the league, and he joins him and helps him win a championship.
Right.
Where do we put him at?
That's the ultimate. Yo, that's
where do you put him at?
Where do we put him at?
Well, so you don't want to talk to a Kobe fan about
over,
that.
Over Jordan, over Kobe with that move right there?
Here's my issue with LeBron. And my sister is the biggest LeBron fan you ever want to meet. She just took a picture with LeBron's mom because she bought season tickets. She's down in Atlanta. She bought season Hawks tickets to sit behind the opposing bench just for the two times a year when LeBron comes.
Wow.
That's the only reason that she bought season tickets down there in Atlanta. So she's a huge LeBron fan. And she and I have this debate all the time. My biggest issue with the way that LeBron did it, right? And people, they got love for it. I just don't. When he decided he was going to roll down to Miami to win that first championship, mm-hmm. if he had just gone down there with Dwayne, I might have been okay. But then they had to bring Bosh. You had three of the top 10 NBA players in the league at the time on the same team. And so when you start talking about winning championships, you look at what Kobe did, and look, I'm a huge fan, so I put that on blast, right? But if you look at the top 75 NBA players, who else besides Shaq that Kobe played with is in the top 75?
Come on.
Nobody. And so when you look at the people that LeBron played with in order to get his rings, shoot, you got Ray Allen, you got Chris Bosh, you got Dwayne Wade, you got all these people that he done won rings with that are in the top 75.
But and didn't Boston have that top three first?
Yeah.
They did. Yeah.
So Boston he had to go there to disassemble them. They was dominating the East with their big three.
Yeah.
Right.
They were, Paul, but think about it this way, though. Those cats were at the end of their prime, and at that point in time, none of them were in the top 10 of the NBA.
They were all three. Paul Pierce was a top 10 scorer.
He wasn't top 10 in the NBA. If you had said, you know, every year the ESPN puts out the top 100, they rank them. He was not in the top 10 those years.
He was in the top 10, but he got his way into the top 10 after they started winning their games, their championship.
Oh, no, he was in the top 10 before. All those cats were in the top 10 when they were at the top of their game, but then they got older, and they decided we're gonna join together.
But LeBron was going up against them. LeBron was going to the finals against them in Cleveland by himself. So what else is he gonna do? If you're going against an army, you gotta go get your army and kill the army. Then you can go about your business.
When Kobe won that ring in 2010, who did he play?
He played them, right?
None of those other players that was on his team are in the top 75 NBA players. Right. When they won in 2010, and they beat that squad, they beat that Celtics squad.
But you're talking about
Paul Gasol, wasn't it?
He's not top 75. I don't think he won. He was in the top 75. I'll go back and check, but I don't think he was. He might have been. But I don't think it was.
He was real good. He was strong in them years.
Kobe was real good.
Okay, gentlemen.
So we can holler about that, but we ain't gonna stay there all day.
We just touching on the facts.
LeBron is a bad, bad man. I would give him that. I just don't think that he need. I look at his championship the same way that people looked at Kevin Durant. He went with Golden State.
Durant went with a machine already, though. They was already a machine.
I'm gonna give it to you the same way I just gave it to you. How many of them cats was in the top 10 other than Steph? They weren't all top 10.
None of them. But they could.
Steph was the only one.
It don't matter. But they was high ranking, man. At their time, they was peaking. They was what, two-time champs already?
Once.
They won once and then lost to LeBron once.
When Kyrie came back.
Then they around that championship. So LeBron went. He only left one time, and then he came back to win at in Cleveland. He came back. It was
he garbage. Brought it back home.
That championship in Cleveland, that was real.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Okay.
I believe they get two if Kyrie wasn't hurt the first one.
Yeah, right. Hurt.
They might have. Yep.
So let's move on to another topic because sports is one of my favorite. I'm a football and a basketball fan. 76ers is my team.
Yes, 76ers is my team
too. Okay, respect.
Look, y'all need to get rid of Harden if y'all can.
Nah, he might not be going nowhere. He might not be leaving.
Look, I'd be praying that he was leaving if I was
gone. And guess who want to come back?
Who's that?
Ben Simmons want to come back.
Oh, Lord.
He want to come back home.
Ben Simmons is the key.
Yeah. Ben Simmons is the key to the to title.
If he got a halfway decent jump shot, then he might.
He don't need it.
He could play down low.
He never needed the jump shot.
10, 6, 11. Down low.
I didn't mean to start that fight. We're going to move along.
All right, Winston,
what's the next thing out there on the curb? What are we talking about?
Okay, we're going to talk about, well, as the days progressed, through the years progressed, how men are still getting slighted, but we get a little bit more respect, right? We get a little bit more respect, but we're getting slighted, especially black men, man. We get slighted by the women these days, like, but we're getting a little more, and some spaces we get more respect than I've seen it in the past. I'm not talking about the 80s or the 70s. That's a whole different woman. The 90s girl is a whole different woman than the 2000 woman and the 2010 and up. It's a whole different woman. It's a whole different lady. So for you to ask certain things from that lady is almost impossible for certain years. You know what I mean? If she's from a certain time.
When you say she's different, what do you mean?
When I say different, all right, I know some women who will be, who will listen to their man or their husband. Like, I know women, some women are just rebellious for no reason. I see it, I speak to women. I know some women, that younger women, that also you'll leave them for a day or two and they'll come back to the argument, almost aggressing like a man. Like, I'm like, yo, you're aggression. Their aggression is like a guy. It's like a man. So
like you forgot about the argument and she comes back.
She the one who enforces the argument. I'm like, yo, I know women are feisty and they have an edge. Like they real.
Not all women.
Yeah. I'm not trying to put everybody in the same boat, but the time is just different. And you just see so much of a difference where it's like a not caring attitude. I don't listen to nobody. I don't do that. You know what I mean? Then you have some that are right and be like, yo, listen to your guy. Listen to your guy. You know, they'll beat it into their friends. They'll beat it into them like that. So the time is so different. And maybe it's been like this before. I'm not sure. But I see on some points that men get treated well. Like, you know what I mean? I see some men get treated well. It's a little different though. The times are just crazy different. And I don't know how to fix it because I'm trying to see what it is first, because you learn from the mistake and then you can, when you go back, you can fix the mistake, but you have to have seen it before. You get what I'm saying? You have to see, like a baseball player when he's playing baseball, he's seen a lot of pitches, right? He's seen a lot of the batter, seen a lot of pitches. So he know, he's going to, on this pitch, he's trying to strike me out. So he's going to throw either a fastball over the plate or something to have me chasing so I can swing it. You get what I'm saying? So we've seen that before. So in this same instance, where you have women, if you go on Instagram, you see all types of crazy women, like crazy styles. And it's like, yo, it got bigger and bigger through the time. So I don't know. We don't know how to fix it.
I think that what I want to say to the women is, if you want to relate to your man, understand that sports is always an opportunity to engage and get in if you understand the game. And that's important because, as you can see, Winston referred to baseball, right?
Yes.
That's how the mind works. You got to respect and understand that.
That's right. And that's so dope. that's dope for you to yeah, because you're a woman and you understand exactly what I'm saying. You understand the dynamics of what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? And that's beautiful. And we look for that. We look for things like that.
That wasn't always the case. I married a man.
It wasn't.
I married a man, Llewellyn Wayne T, who understood the feel.
Right.
And then understanding it as his woman and wife, he taught me.
Right.
Whenever, you know, I'd rise up, he said, baby, listen, remember who's running the ball. I'm the quarterback.
Absolutely.
I'm taking this ball down the field.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, understand that. And we communicate like that. And I have to say that in my heart and mind, I believe my man has to be the lead.
That's right.
He has to be able to tell me where we're going, we're going to get there, what it takes to do it, and how we partner in it. That's the lead.
So I'm gonna jump in on this one, because I mean this is one of the things that people are talking about in the streets, right? Because this generation really isn't into marriage, but they are into relationship. Mm-hmm. And you know, given I've been married for 26 years, I get a lot of young folks to say, tell me how y'all did that, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of it is in our choice, right? Because sometimes we look for stuff that ain't good for us. That's men and women on both sides, right? We look for what looks good to us, but might not be good for us,
right?
We also don't understand.
Hold up there for a minute. Hold up there, Commissioner. Hmm? That's the biggest mistake men and women make. You're looking at the physical and you don't see the heart and the mind. So when you get in trouble, you're trying to figure out why the looks aren't carrying you through. They won't. Go ahead.
When Tesca and I, before we got married, we read a book by P.B. Wilson called Knight in Shining Armor. She's a Christian author. And one of the things that she talks about is working on you before you get into relationships. So before we decided, okay, we're going to get into relationship, even prior to marriage, we said, okay, we got to fix our stuff. Because everybody brings stuff to a marriage,
right?
Or a relationship. Let's just talk relationship. Everybody brings stuff to a relationship. And until you work on your own stuff and know what your own triggers are, you bring in that, and what you're trying to do is intertwine it with somebody else who hasn't figured out their stuff. And so, you know, my father and his wife, you know, I call her my bonus mom, you know, they were marriage counselors, Christian marriage counselors. And one of the things that they said, you know, and I agree with, when you look at most relationships for men would be, if you were looking at a newspaper, we would be the headlines, right? We big, but women are the story. They're the print. They look at all the details. They look at all those things, right? And depending upon what you're looking for as a man, right, and what you're looking for in that mate, you're going to get somebody good like that, but you got to make sure you're choosing well as well, right? And so some of it is, you know, in their part and where what they come to the table with. And as I told my son, look, if she's not coming to the table with the right stuff, then that's not the right one for you. At least not the right one for you right now, right?
Simply,
and so, right? So there's a lot to the relationship game, and it's not an either or, it's a both and. We all bring stuff to the table, and it's how we respond to one another and how we wake up one another and how we hold up one another in order to get our best out of each other.
Right.
You know, there are no perfect marriages. There are no perfect relationships. There's love. But more than the love, there's the connection and there's commitment to the relationship and to the power greater than yourself. I choose God. Whoever you choose to go right with me, I choose God.
Can I throw this in real quick, and then I'm going to shut up on this. But
no, don't.
I might not. But when you all were talking about, you know, the man is the lead, and that is correct, right? But also as we lead, we have to make sure that we are leading in good stead. And so as we lead, one of the things that I always wanted for my wife, I wanted to make sure I had her approval. So even though I might make the final decision and I lead, I'm making sure, okay, are you good, right? So if we lead without our queen in mind, right, we're just leading because this is where the way we think it should go and the way that we're going, we ain't doing it in the right way. But if we're leading and saying, I'm leading, this is where I'm trying to take us, this is the vision, are you good with that? Because we both got to hold up our share in this vision. And she says, I'm good with that. You can lead with confidence. And she's going to follow with confidence because she knows that's you're right. leading in good stead and you only want that's the best right. for her.
That's right. right.
And listen, come on, ring the bell. Go ahead. Ring the bell because a lot of people get caught up in lead and they think the lead means control.
Right.
Actually means partnership. The lead actually means respect. The lead means love.
Yeah.
And I think, Commissioner, you had it right when you said, we have to have a vision.
Absolutely.
I'm not following a man just because he says.
Right.
He's got to have a vision. He's got to have a plan. He's got to tell me how we're going to do it, where I fit in, where he fits in, and where, when we come to the middle of the road, how we partner.
Mm.
That's okay? right.
He's got to be able to tell me that. He's got to be able to show me that. He's got to show me that he has a plan. So, Commissioner, you said a mouthful. Winston, you said a mouthful. Paul, you started a fight with the sports, and I love it.
Yeah. I'm about to start another one.
You about to start another one?
Yeah, I'm about to start another one.
This is the barbershop right here.
Let me start. Only because we live, and we're viewing to three different areas and a bunch of different groups.
No, we're actually viewing to almost eight different areas.
Oh, eight different areas? Pardon me. I'm going to start off by this disclaimer that whatever I say about relationships does not pertain to my wife. These are only things that I've witnessed and I've seen throughout my 42 years of living on this planet. You know, I enjoy living in my home and I don't want to sleep on the grass.
That was a real good one, Paul. He was on point.
With that being said, when we talk about leadership, we also have to see that that your partner is willing to be led. He or she has to be coachable. Even the leader has to be coachable.
That's
because
right.
it has to be a meeting at the minds to move forward.
If
the meeting is dissolved, then you're going to have a hard time getting to where you need to get to. And nowadays, I see it lately, you know, with the more independent women. You know, when a woman is too independent, when a man is too independent, they don't take heed to what they're being communicated to, nor do they communicate back to the partner. You know, and a big part of leadership is, you know, you guys would know, is communication from top down.
Ring that bell, Winston. Ring that bell.
Right.
from
top down and from bottom up. Communication is the key. And I think we lose a lot of communication, especially when it comes to, like, you know, looking for certain things. Like, I start hearing about, and I read a book, I forget who the author was, Speaking Her Love Language.
Yes, you know, love language. Five love languages.
Exactly. You know, everything is towards...
He already knew.
Absolutely. See?
Right.
But here's my point. Everything is geared towards speaking her language.
Mm.
What about his language? That's where I'm saying the meeting is dissolved. Like,
Stay tuned, sir. We're doing a whole podcast on his language.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we fall short. We break our backs trying to speak their language, but no one ever tries to speak our language. And it's not that hard to learn.
I think that what has happened is this is generational.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Women are taught to be one way and men are taught to be another way. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Men, don't cry.
Nope.
Man up.
Right.
Don't show your feelings. A woman is express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Talk about what you're going through. And so in learning how to speak his language, and we're doing that podcast, you know, what he's thinking, what we're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn how there are no perfect relationships. But in learning how to be in partnership, you have to learn to listen, to hear, and understand. And not to respond. Listen, to hear, and understand, because men have feelings. Men, like you said, Paul, you have a language too. We have to learn how to speak it. I learned how to speak sports language with my husband, which is why I got into sports. I knew that the best way to communicate, I could cook the best meal.
Yes.
I could keep the house. I could keep the kids. I could, you know, do whatever I needed to do to be his significant other.
Right.
But until I learned to speak his language, which was sports, I couldn't really get in.
Right, right.
Once I understood how to get in, look, I went and studied the game. Uh-huh. Football, basketball, hell, I even did soccer. He didn't even watch soccer, but I wanted
to just in case.
So you want to be one up, right?
I wanted to be one up. No. So learning how to speak a man's language.
Right.
It's important for us, as much for us as it is for you learning how to speak his language. Women right. will say, he doesn't understand me. You don't understand him either. Because if you were meeting halfway and you were both trying to understand, the gap wouldn't be so large.
Right.
Let me ask you this.
That's a bell ring right there.
Yeah, that definitely is a bell ring. Let me ask you this as well. When you were learning how to speak his language, when you were studying the sports, right? And the first time that you showed him that you were at least trying, was he responsive to that?
Not only was he responsive, but he taught me more.
Exactly.
Because I was open to it. He taught me more. I wanted to learn how to speak his language. He was one of five children and the only boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gone away to Vietnam and helped a lot with a lot of different things. But the point was, he had never been in a relationship where a woman worked to understand him.
Mm-hmm.
My mother taught me how to cook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women say, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're feeding the stomach, you got to feed the mind too.
Yes.
Mm. Yep.
Okay. A lot of women miss that.
Yep.
A lot of women miss that. My husband would tell me, I don't care what we disagree on. When we get upstairs, we are one.
One. Yeah, that's right. Okay?
So that's why he was my guy. that was my man right there.
We weren't going to sleep, you know, angry. We weren't doing any of that. And he taught me so much because I grew up in a home with two parents.
That's right.
And my mother and father would let us see them fight and let us see them resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
That played a big role in me wanting to understand my husband more.
Right.
Now, for the record, when women don't have that exposure, they have to be taught.
Yes.
If they don't have that exposure, they have to be taught.
Are they willing to accept the teaching? Because it seems like a whole bunch of them not willing to accept the teaching. They want to run. They just running.
But Winston, part of it, I'll ask you this. How are we leading? Right? So just as Annette tried to figure out her husband's love language or his language,
right?
We got to understand if we're going to lead. When I lead a team at YUSA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I got to know more than they know, or at least I got to know what to get them to where I need to get them.
Got to be able to teach me.
Right? And so with Teska, it's funny because we got married, and I told this story on Annette's show, and when I come on your show, Winston, I'm telling the story there too.
Absolutely.
But before we moved to Trenton, we had built a house down in West Hampton, right down there, Willingboro.
Right.
And we built that house so that my nephew, who we had custody of, could go to a good school system. Because we had him up in East Orange, and it was crazy up there in East Orange for a second.
Oh, I know.
And so when we built the house, in 1999, Doug Palmer offered me a job here, and he said, but you got to move to the city. I was like, but I already work in the city. Do I got to actually move here? He was like, you got to move here. So I went home to tell my wife, who we just built a house 4 years prior, that, hey, look, if we want this gig, you know, we got to move to the city. And she was like, why do we have to move? I said, look, I'm not even going to tell you that we got to move. I could do that job, or I could continue doing what I'm doing. But one of the things that you and I have always talked about, when we got married, we talked about this. How do we impact the lives of other people? So I'm not going to tell you that we need to move, but I'm going to ask you this question, and I'm going to leave it up to you. Can we impact more people here in West Hampton, or can we impact more people in the city of Trenton? She didn't bat an eye. She said, let's put the house up for sale next week and let's go do what we do. But I knew her love language, because her love language is acts of service. Right. And so when you speak to their love language, you lead because they can be open to being led, because now you know their love language.
Right. So I want to go back off something that you said earlier about you said something about leading. You said leading as well. But the thing was, you'd have what I could see you saying. I'm like, yo, the person, if you leave a person in a certain place, they have to be able to hold everything down. The hold, like, can you hold? If I go out here in the woods and go hunting for our food, will you be okay? Will you hold things down here? And I seen what you were saying. I'm like, yo, she can hold it down. And that's what you want to find. You want to find somebody that can hold things down. You don't want somebody that when you leave, your house is crazy. You feel me? And you come back into a place that's crazy. And well, that's, you know, a lot that's happening right now.
You know the biggest mistake that men make?
What's that?
They look at the physical.
Right.
They look at the physical and they think that's love. And
some guys, that I'm gonna have to go against that. Some guys are strong and they can see through that. Some guys are strong, like, because they've been through it so many times. We'll be beat 1,000 times, but I think a lot of us, 1,001 times, we're not beat all the time. You get what I'm saying?
Not all guys, the time.
Yeah, guys are just like pretty strategic too. Guys are like, some guys are like that too, where they're strategic. Women are strategic. But I think guys get bang, bang, bang so many times until he's able to stand up. You fall a lot of times. You fall a whole bunch of times, but you, one time, you're going to stand up. You know what I mean? You ain't going to be down forever.
But so the point is, he doesn't have to get banged up if he will start looking at her heart and her mind.
But you got to look at our side.
And you her can mind.
See that. You got to see, we all speaking from people with experience. When you're young and you don't have no experience, you can't see that. You go off of your nature, and your nature is looking at the physical. You know,
and you're a lady.
That's either side though. That's either side.
You're right.
You're a beautiful woman, right? Like, all right, just like most women, they can see through other women, right? They can see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We can see through guys. We'd be like, all right, your daughter brings somebody in the house, somebody, you'd be like, what are you doing with him? You know what I mean? You'll ask her, like, well, it's just my friend, but you could see through him. A guy can see through a guy, and a woman can see through a girl. It's just how divine nature was built. Like, it's just like, that's your, you know what I mean? That's our blessing apart, you know what I mean? We're going to look at something that's glorious, like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean? See a young Annette up the block. Woo! I know, you know what I mean?
Winston was going to holler, sister.
Yeah, they go, holler.
Let me tell you something. When a man loves a woman, she can do no wrong. And it doesn't matter whether he loves her looks, her heart, or her mind.
But
I will tell you that a lot of things would change if people would start to look at character.
You're right.
See, some women make a choice about where they're going to be in this life. You understand? They make a choice. And those are the type of women. If you're chasing a woman because she looks good, her house is dirty, she got 20 different kids by 20 different men.
Hello.
Be prepared for what comes with that.
Right. Absolutely.
Fooling yourself and be prepared, just like with a man. Right. Women. If he has children all over the place, he's irresponsible. He mistreats his mother. He disrespects his mother and his sisters. You get what your hand called for.
Absolutely.
Because you're not moving in wisdom. Because wisdom allows you, right? Because people they misconstrue knowledge and wisdom.
Yes,
knowledge is what you know. Wisdom is being able to learn without having to go through it. You can see it. Somebody's told you, right? Yes. You can see those things.
Yes.
And that character that Sister Annette's talking about,
yes,
character, you know, the basic definition of character is the you who you are when nobody else is watching.
That's
That's right. That's your character.
Yeah. Let's go deeper now. Absolutely. We're gonna go deeper. All right. And I'm not female bashing or anything like that. But do you think?
No, come on.
Do you think a lot of the changes and decisions from the female side is determined behind like the help that they receive from the government? Because in comparison.
You mean parents who are on welfare?
Yeah, absolutely. Stuff like that. Yep.
Okay.
Catholic so let's charities, let's, welfare.
Let's bring the noise. Like I have to be careful here now.
Oh, yeah.
Because okay. I have a gag order. But let me just say this. No, welfare was never meant to be a way of life.
That's right.
Never. It was always meant to be a stepping stone because people lose jobs.
That's right. You know,
partners die.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen. You know, and so the whole social service gig was meant to be a stepping stone. But what has happened is generation after generation after generation has relied on the system. And we've relied on the system so much, men and women alike, that we depend on the government to provide recreation for our kids.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's not just about child support. It's not just about social services. We misunderstand and want the government to be responsible for our children's recreation. Mm-hmm. Now, should there be programs available? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's contingent on the tax base and the money available to that particular municipality. People miss that too.
Mm-hmm.
So let's round it up by saying this to answer your question, Paul.
And I want to ask you something afterwards.
Absolutely. Not
this
to deep in the woods, but social services, simply all social services, housing, Section 8, welfare, food stamps, was meant to be a stepping stone.
That's right.
And some of us have made it our foundation.
That's right.
And I'm not choosing that one. Right.
That's right.
I'm just saying, you know, and that's the other piece of it, right? How are we choosing? Right. I dated a lot of sisters that, you know, were utilizing the system. But that's just not what I was gonna choose. Right. When it came down to it, I was like, okay, I'm looking for something different. Right. When I was looking for my wife, I said there are three things. Everything else could be kind of crazy, but there are three things that I gotta be able to.
Say that again. When I was looking for my wife.
Right. When I was searching for my wife, there were things that I knew I needed to have. So the first thing is she's gotta be attractive to me. Now, what everybody else thinks, it don't matter.
Yeah,
she's gotta be attractive to me. Right?
She's beautiful.
That's right.
And Teska is fine. And she's attractive to other people too. So I gotta watch them brothers too. You know. But the other piece was I also wanted to make sure that we could hold a good conversation. She had to be intellectual and have a vision that she was going someplace in life, right?
Yeah.
This is what we want to do together. So when we talked about things, I wasn't talking about being successful, and her idea of success was just making it to the next paycheck. That wasn't for me, right? And then the other thing was we needed to be spiritually compatible. Those are the three things. I said, if I can get all three of those, that's going to be the one for me. If I can only get two out of three, that's not the one. And so I set those standards for me.
Yeah.
So it's a sister that might be using the system to use the system and game it. There's a difference between using it to move further and gaming the system.
That's right.
And so a sister that's gaming it, they weren't on my same level. I wasn't looking for them. But a sister that might use it to say, okay, now I'm getting a year. This is what I'm going to do next. And this is what I'm going to do next. Well, that could be a sister that I was looking for.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But that's exactly how he's thinking, how he thought. We think that's how we think. That's how we think. If they got this and that and that, that's the one I'm getting it. You feel me?
That's how we all want it.
If it's not in those orders, but if it don't have any three of them inside of her, we won't want it. We don't want it.
Yeah.
But another thing I was asking, he's right. I love to tell him for him, even though this ain't my show, but I got to,
Let me let Paul follow up with his question first.
No, that was, go ahead. No, that was cool.
And I want to just ask you, right? I wanted to ask Annette this. I wanted to ask, and any of you can answer.
right? Like in the NBA, these guys have etiquette. They go to classes, NBA, NFL, to spend their money or whatever, or to get them straight, right? So when some females, because it's not a wrong thing for them to be on any assistance, they might really need it at the time. But do you think that they should take certain courses, whoever, anybody, male, female, should they take certain courses to be able to wean off that? Because we were raised, all of us in here probably was raised, because my parents were older. Me and his parents were older. I'm pretty sure you guys' parents were older. So we come from a certain time. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So the time frame is much different. That's why I'm like, yo, maybe they might need a course to go into. And it, I know when somebody's hungry, like, oh, I ain't going no course, no 6 months or nothing like that. But even if it's small courses that they can wean off, and not everybody is strong enough to wean off of those sources of help. They're not strong enough. So do you think it's a good thing if they would get like some courses or some type of counseling before they go into that the whole Section 8 and all that stuff? Do you think should try to get courses?
Let me assure you and the audience this, because after this, it doesn't matter how many people are looking at it now. Thousands of people are going to see it.
People look, yeah, we ain't worried about
thousands
that.
Thousands of people are going to see it. And here's what I want you to know. In social services in New Jersey, they offer stepping stones out of the system.
That's right. Oh, they do. They do, man.
They absolutely do.
I never heard of it.
They provide child care for the man or woman, because men are on social services
too, to
ensure that their needs are met to meet the goals of self-sufficiency.
Wow.
That stuff is already in place. Already in place. And there are many who fail to take advantage of it. They were offering job training.
Right.
Paying for you to go to school and get certificates, all kinds of things so that you could go to work, paying for childcare. And then, you know, a few years back, they were buying you a car so you had transportation and paying the insurance for the first year.
Oh, man.
There weren't many people who took advantage of that.
Yeah.
See, I want to get out of the, because right now we're kind of talking about where people are, where they're positioned.
Yeah.
And where they're positioned does not mean that that's where they're going to end up.
Absolutely.
Right. And so the things that I was talking about, it's a mindset, right? We talk about, there are people that have what we call wealth mentality. There's people that have poverty mentality, right?
Right.
You could put them in any situation and they're going to see the wealth in that situation, any place they go, or they're going to see glass half empty, the poverty in that situation, any place they go. You know, my mother was not older. My mother actually was 18 when she had me, and if you've watched any of Annette's other shows, you know that I'm actually the product of a rape.
Right.
And from the time that I was born until the time I was 8 years old, we lived in 22 different places.
Right.
We were getting evicted out of almost every place that we lived in.
Right.
But that was our situation and our position in life. That wasn't our mentality.
At the time, we thought about, okay,
where do we want? She thought about where she wanted to be. That was instilled in me that I've always got to be thinking forward. Where do I want to be? My position in life, or where I am right now, my situation does not define my destiny.
Absolutely.
And so we got to make sure that, you know, as we're talking about this, there are people that are in these systems. This is really about how we impact people's thought process, mentality, in the structures that they're in. And you know, I gotta come in
because even though you said you told, and you know, I'm down with you. You know, you my guy, right?
Yep.
But the timing is different. Even if it was bad back then, what was that like '60s? And I'm not trying to tell everybody.
Yeah.
All right. So if that you were rocking around the '70s, you and your mom was moving through the '70s. You had a little. Had maybe little to no help, but your culture in that time is different than it is now. It's way different. Like the way things go now is different. And I know everybody would be like, yeah, it's the same way. It's not. You could come out from where you were and become lawyers, doctors, judges, big time sports players, because of the drive that it was at the time for especially Black people. We didn't have anybody else that we could run to at the time. Like Miss Annette came into the office and she immediately started to help in the early 80s. You get what I'm saying? We didn't have anything. Like, so our whole thing was like already tight knit. Like, it was tight knit in the 70s, tight knit in part of the 80s, until it started to get loose in the 90s and people didn't care much. And you know what I mean? We got what we have out here in the street now. But I didn't want to turn it kind of political or against anybody. It's just the way I want how Black people were tight knit. You know what I mean? We were more tight knit families, even if it was just me and my mom. Like, we were tight knit. My mother used to walk me to baseball games. Usually that's my father's job. He's working steel mill somewhere, but my mother walking me and her. I remember we got caught in the rain. I remember Doug Palmer brung us home one time. A few times she brung me to all types of practices, football practice, and we walked because she didn't drive. But it was, the next door neighbor had a family of six or seven as well. So we know that it was tight knit. It was more tight knit at the time, and that's how we have you. That's more successful at this time. You wasn't gonna stop. You know what I mean? You don't have a whole bunch of people that quit like that.
And your community. Your community wasn't going to let you go that. Like, they're not going to let you fall. It's not like it's not like nowadays where if they see you about to fall, they put the video out and watch you fall. They're going to stop you. They're going to go up and help you. Like, you know what I mean? And not taking away from your plight. Not taking away anything from your plight.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I ain't trying to make it.
No, I feel you.
It is something. I'm sorry. What happened? That's right.
I think what's most important to understand is there's some really good people out here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There are a lot of people who are struggling and trying to make it.
That's right.
The welfare system is meant to be a stepping stone.
That's right.
Not the whole foundation, just a stepping stone. So generational curses have continued to present in every community. It's not just our community, it's every community. You see it here because you're here. But what I would encourage everybody to do who's listening to this podcast is to reach outside your comfort zone and to get to know different people, places, and things.
That's right.
And in that, I promise you, you're going to learn some things.
Yeah.
You'll be educated about some things, and you're going to grow. For example, sidebar, did you know that every one of you should go to a bank, open a trust, and from that trust, get life insurance policies for everybody in your family? And that trust, all of the money from any life insurance should go to that trust. That's how you build generational wealth very easily.
That's right.
A lot of people don't know that. There are some things you simply have to teach because the foundation has been there. And that's why mentoring is so important. I brought you guys on tonight because I wanted you to share your experience, strength, and hope. And you've talked about sports. We could talk about sports forever. We talked about relationships. We talked about marriage. We talked about partnerships. So I want one last question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the real problem out here?
How do we get to the money?
Very easily. Solid. You see that sign behind me?
Yep.
I'm in the Black Girls Locker Room. That's real. Solidarity wins.
Right.
And until people understand that, you don't have to agree on everything.
That's right.
So if the four of us had a common goal that we're going to put in, you know, as much money as we can until we reach 25,000, we're going to buy an old raggedy piece of property. We're going to fix it up and we're going to resell it.
That's right.
Until we get to the fact that everybody in our neighborhood owns our neighborhood except us.
That's right.
You see any African American establishments anymore?
That's right.
You don't. Home ownership has gone, you know, by the wayside. We have to own property. We have to buy homes and get out of that. I don't want nobody in my business and join in with your family and live together. You can do that.
That's one thing. And also, we got to stop being stop being scared. We have to stop being scared of each other, because we could probably get more land and houses. There's so many black cities like East Orange. It's bad, but you just can't be scared. The other man isn't scared. You know what I mean? We're cautious, of course. We know better, but they're not scared.
Do you think astronomical rents are accidents and mortgages? And people are buying houses $100,000 above asking price.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
That means that the value of the property is not meeting the mortgage. Do you think that's an accident?
Right. It's a seller's market right now. You know, I ran into a guy in the airport last month, and he was saying that he thought he was going to beat the market, and he sold his crib. And right now he's basically homeless. He got a bunch of money for it. He got the bag,
but he ain't got nowhere to go.
He can't find a place to live. And so many people that I've talked to, that's the issue. So go back to your Winston. You said, how do we get the bag, right? Yeah. And part of getting the bag is, how do we figure out how to trust one another?
Yes, that's right? It too. Going
right. Up. So there's a level of trust. And when you talk about that fear, it's really trust in supporting one another. Right. So if we can get to that, you know, we could create a bag.
Right.
The black dollar last year, just in the United States, $3 trillion.
Trillion.
That's more than some nations.
Yes.
Trillion.
More than $3 trillion, the black dollar, but most of it was not spent in our community.
Right.
And so that, because we don't trust one another.
Yes.
And right. And so we got to figure out how to really rebuild trust. Because what you were talking about, a couple minutes ago, you were really talking about how we trust one another and love one another. That's what you were really saying.
That's right. That's right.
And so when we figure that out,
yes,
we can be incredibly powerful. Yes. $1 can go far.
The other thing, Sam, Commissioner, I want to be clear about, is you don't need a lot of money to start a business. That's another podcast we're going to have. For those of you who are re-entering society, who don't have the money, there are very basic things that you can do to start a small business with little to no money.
Right.
You know, listen, the reality of it is the bag is out here. How we get it is important. Everybody owns our neighborhood but us. There are no black corner stores anymore.
Right.
There are no black liquor stores. There's no black clothing stores. There's no black anything anymore.
Anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, all the hair we buy comes from somebody else. Start supporting black businesses. Start there. And this is not anti anything else.
Right.
Except there are certain stores I go in and black people don't work there.
That's right.
It shouldn't work for you. I'm not going to mention any cultures.
And I'm not supporting them.
Right.
Because if you can't at least pay some black folks a wage, you know, they might not own the store. At least they could be getting some money because they're an employee. I'm not talking about
that. They're not employing us.
Right.
So you better wake up, you better take a look, and you better understand that getting to the bag means just solidarity. Find somebody like you who wants to do what you're doing. Y'all link up and have a partnership. If it don't work out, split the proceeds, build your own, they build their own. But you got to start building. You got to get out of the fashion.
Yes,
you're buying designer bags and clothes and all this other stuff that has no return.
To go nowhere.
Yes.
To ultimately go nowhere.
Well, for some folks, it's a business for them. It's a business for them. So I wouldn't.
You're making Louis Vuitton rich.
Wealthy, they it's a sort of a business too. So we don't want to throw them in the garbage. We don't want to throw them away.
Anybody in the garbage who's not well, in my community.
If they selling Louis, you know, at one of the Buy Blacks, I'll buy it there. But if they selling Louis out the shop, we can get it every now and then. We can get it every now and then.
Yeah, we can touch it.
But don't make a living on that. Look, I got a good friend I've only bought one brand new car my whole life. And I only did it because I said, let me see how it feels.
Yeah.
And buying the car brand new wasn't any different than buying it 2 years old.
Oh,
my friends, all my friends that have a lot of money, you're millionaires and what have you. But like, how'd you get there? They say, well, first of all, I never buy a new car. Like, you see that Rolls Royce I got outside? I bought that 2 years old. Because when I buy that, as soon as I drive it off the lot, it takes a hit. So I'd rather somebody else take the hit, and I'll buy it and when it's at its real value. So, I mean, there's certain things that we have to learn that, yeah, it's wonderful. You can say, oh, I bought that new. But if you bought a brand new Mercedes and you're sleeping in it, there's a problem.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't imagine. Everybody has a right to live the way they want.
Absolutely.
I could never imagine living in public housing and driving a luxury car. I'd rather put that money into a house for my kids.
Right.
So that's how I feel. That's how I feel.
Right.
Somebody in public housing might feel different. I respect that.
It's crazy. It's crazy in that, because I know people that pay more than I pay for my mortgage for their place in public housing.
And I think I have
that's all right property. Like, I have a decent property.
Yeah.
You
know,
well, it's adjustable. Yeah, it's adjustable based on how much they make.
Yeah.
Right. So they playing in public housing. Some people just like to live there. That's fine.
Yeah.
Right. But you're not getting any equity out of it, and you can't write it off at the end of the year. I write off all my interest at the end of the year. I'm looking for write offs right now. That's what I'm trying to do. Every place I go, I'm trying to figure out the write off.
That's where I'm at.
Absolutely.
Well, let's round up, gentlemen. We're at an hour.
Can I say one more thing? What we need to do as black men. And I'm really saying it just to put it in the universe. I think that we should really come get something where we can come together and become a sphere and do a business just like other races do. I'm not coming at any other race, but I see you do certain things, other races. And I'm speaking to them now, but I'm speaking to us. I just want to team up and create a sphere that, like an unstoppable sphere. You feel me? So we need to get together. Let me put it out in the world, you know, at least through this podcast, and maybe we can make it happen. That's all I wanted to say.
So I'd like each of you, as men, to tell a woman one thing that you would want her to know. As married men, what works for you? And Winston, as a single available bachelor,
yes,
what works for you? Just one thing. I'm going to start with Sam.
When you listen and validate me, that's the hottest thing in the world.
Okay.
Hottest thing in the world.
Yeah.
All right. Winston?
Me, I'm with that as well. I just need her to listen. I need her to be more soft. That's all I need. Just to be more soft, listen, and that's all I need. And, you know, respond back, but that's all I need. You know.
All right. All right. Okay, Paul.
All right. This is a disclaimer once again. Nah. All right.
Hey, Rajanka. He's staying in line.
We're around.
Just understand that in a relationship, anybody that's involved in a relationship has value, whether it's great value, good value, negative value. You have to understand where your position is, where do you want to go, and how do you move forward with judging the value in your relationship. I'm just leaving it at that.
Thank you, Jamie. And as the woman on the call, I'd like to say that if you're going to leave, you have to have a vision and a plan to tell us how to get there. My name is Annette. I'd like to thank you for being here with us this evening at Word on the Curb. I'm going to invite these gentlemen back again. Are you guys willing to come back?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I'm going to add three more people to the podcast. There'll be six men and one woman. And we're going to be talking about what's on his mind. What is he talking about and what is he thinking about? There's some great men out here. Don't discount that. Look at the heart and the mind before you look at anything else, okay? Keep your heads out of bed and do what you need to do to develop a relationship. Sam said it best. Paul followed up with it. You have to know what it is you want. I'd like to bid you all a good night and thank you for joining us here at Word on the Curb. And listen, you can see us on Facebook, at Black Girls Locker Room. You can see us on Facebook at What Trenton Really Makes. You can see us on Facebook at Word on the Curb. You can see us at New Pod City at Word on the Curb. You can see us on Instagram, Facebook, in Philadelphia, in Norfolk, and in Virginia. You can see us wherever podcasts are. See us on YouTube. Hit the like, subscribe, and share button. This is one time we want you to put all our business in the street.